You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Well, I think we're doing very well as a country. Our minimum wage is one of the highest in the developed world in terms of percentage of the average wage. We're growing more jobs in the economy. More Kiwis are getting jobs. Wage rates have grown quite substantially, actually, since we've been in government. They're up. The average wage is up $17,000 since we came into office. Inflation's been running very low, too, so real wages have grown quite well. So as a country, I think we're doing pretty well. The concern I have with the Labor Party policy is they eventually want to get it up to about $19 an hour or so. They want to ram it up in quite a fast way, which would actually cost people jobs. You have to remember, if you want to move the minimum wage up, you have to do it gradually if you want to ensure people still have jobs. If you ram it up too fast, there will be people that end up unemployed and on the welfare queue. The issue with the 90-day trials as well is they were brought in during a difficult period for the country when unemployment was rising and when we were going through the global financial crisis. It was designed to try and ensure that employers could take on more people and ensure that people were getting jobs during a difficult period. And they served their purpose very well. My understanding is they're very rarely used these days. But where there's an opportunity for someone to get a go at a job and have an opportunity to have a go getting into employment, where the employer views there may be some risk, it actually is a good thing for getting more people into work. We want more people working. We want wages to be rising. We have been lifting the minimum wage. You can't just ram it up in a fast way, though.
Does National have any plans to boost it up to kind of match what Labor have proposed?
Well, we have been boosting it every year. Every year we increase the minimum wage. It's up to $15.75 right now. Just this year we increased it by 3.5%. We increased the starting out and the training wage as well at the same time. We will continue to increase the minimum wage. The point, the difference between Labor and National is that Labor wants to artificially raise it at a very fast rate, which would end up costing people jobs. When they were proposing large minimum wage rises in previous elections, Treasury did some analysis which would have which indicated about 5,000 to 6,000 people, based on their last policy, would lose jobs if they were to ram it up in a fast way. I don't know if there's been a Treasury analysis done on their current policy. I'm sure there will be, but if you move it up too fast, you will cost jobs, and that's been historically what has happened. We also should consider how we're tracking compared to other countries. I don't believe Labor's I don't agree with Labor's spin that it's a race to the bottom. If you compare us with other countries, we're at 52% of the average wage. That's where our minimum wage sits at, 52%. Australia's at 44%, Germany's at 43%, the UK 41%, Canada 40%, and the United States is sitting at 25%. Compared to the countries that we compete with, that we look at for ensuring that we're doing the right thing as a country, we're doing much better than those other countries. So we have, relatively, compared to other countries, a generous minimum wage. We should continue to increase it, but it has to be done in a way that doesn't cost Kiwis jobs.
Just bringing it back to kind of New Zealand and the statistics around poverty that New Zealand sees, so 40% of children live in poverty, 40% of children in poverty live in a working household, and two-thirds of workers' pay fell in real terms last year, despite the economy growing. So working people are not sharing the economy prosperity. Isn't it kind of the responsibility of the government to implement a way for wealth to be shared around fairly?
Well, firstly, Tess, I wouldn't believe all those numbers that Labor puts into their policy, but when it comes to children, I think the best thing that we've been able to do as a government is ensure that there are fewer children living in benefit-dependent homes and more children in homes where their parents are working. 60,000 fewer children are living in benefit-dependent homes compared to when we became government. That is a remarkable success, and I'm very proud to be part of a government that's achieved that. We've also, during the last budget, put in place a family incomes package which targets support for those most in need. It sees the average, it sees 1.5 million people getting an increase in their wages by about $26 an hour on average. That's a big increase. When it came to those that were on benefit, we increased benefit rates by $25 a week not that long ago as well. We're ensuring that more support is targeted to those most in need, and we're doing it in a way that we'll see at the same time wages continue to rise in the economy and more jobs being created in the economy. Yes, we need to see wages rise. We're seeing that happening. I wouldn't want to see policies put in place that would actually cost Kiwis jobs, though, because that means more children living in benefit-dependent homes, and that's not a good outcome for them.
But, I mean, another part of Labor's policy, which you could kind of argue that it caters to the fairness of spreading the economic growth, is the Fair Pay Agreement, which enables unions and businesses to work together to decide basic pay and working conditions in an industry, and that work for everybody without negatively affecting employment.
Now, Tess, that's a 1970s policy that New Zealand did away with several decades ago, well before you and I entered the world and got into the workplace. The national awards that New Zealand used to have led to strikes up and down the country on a very regular basis. It also led to a situation where there was a lack of competition between businesses. And if you were to implement what they're suggesting through the, I think, poorly named Fair Pay Awards, it would lead to a business in Western Bay of Plenty having to pay exactly the same and have exactly the same conditions as a business in West Auckland. There would be no competition. There would be no ability for employers to reward people that were exceptional employees, and no ability for employers to compete with other businesses to get the best employees for their business. And it would lead to more and more strikes. It is almost compulsory unionism by the back door with a poorly named policy, which is designed to make it sound nowhere near as scary as it actually is. The world's moved away from this type of employment relation policy. We're more towards having an employment relations policy that does allow for unionism where the employees want it to happen, but still allows a whole lot of competition. And quite frankly, I think this is the Labor Party's ability to allow the unions to elect their leader, getting a bit of a payoff by way of policy wins.
But I mean, given the statistics around working poor and poverty and children, isn't this kind of the best approach to ensure that bad employers as race to the bottom, as Labor calls it, doesn't undermine good employers who treat their workers to good conditions and fair pay? Like, doesn't this kind of balance it out a bit?
No, Tess, just because the Labor Party puts some words into a policy, it doesn't make it true. We don't have whole-scale poor employment practices. Compared to many other countries, we're doing well. We don't have whole-scale low wages. Compared to other countries, we pay a higher minimum wage as an average, as a percentage of the average wage. And we have been lifting wages. There are more people working in the Department of Labor, working in MB, that work in this particular area to ensure there are fair practices. And when it comes to New Zealanders getting more money in their pockets, wages are rising, more New Zealanders are seeing more money in their pockets, more New Zealanders are getting into work, and I think that's the most important thing. I don't think we should be having workplace relations policy that is designed for a few unions that are able to elect the Labor Party leader. I think we should have an employment relations policy that leads to more Kiwis getting off welfare, getting into work, and living successful lives. And that's what we're delivering as a country.
Okay, so moving on. So there's been a lot of controversy about the situation regarding Peter Thiel's citizenship in New Zealand after only being here for 12 days. So normally a permanent resident would have to spend 1,350 days in the country over 5 years before being granted citizenship. So why is it different for Peter Thiel?
Well, the citizenship policy, just as the residency policies, allow for some exceptions if someone is investing in New Zealand. And Labor gave Peter Thiel a residency back when they were in government, and the National Government, so National Minister, gave him citizenship. The exceptions are there for ministers to make a judgment that someone's contribution to the country is a benefit to New Zealand and that they would benefit the country by being a New Zealand citizen. Clearly, the minister at the time made a call based on the advice from the Department of Internal Affairs that Peter Thiel would be of benefit to New Zealand. I've not seen the paperwork. I wasn't involved in the decision. I can't really comment much more than what I've seen out there, except to say there's policy exceptions there so we can make judgment calls about what's in the best interest of New Zealand.
But can't you invest in a country without becoming a citizen?
Yes, you can. But if an argument's put forward to a minister that we can benefit even more if someone is investing in the country and has a cultural investment by way of being a New Zealander, then an argument can be made that they should get citizenship, and that's what's happened here. Having exceptions to policy is not unusual. I mean, if you look at the residency program, and if you look at the immigration settings that we have in the country, there's judgment calls made every single day by Immigration New Zealand, and then there's judgment calls made every day by immigration ministers around exceptions. And I guarantee you that just about every Labor MP, as well as National, Green and New Zealand First MP, will have made some sort of representation to a minister on behalf of an individual to get an exception to an immigration policy at some point in time. It's not unusual. What is different in this case is the guys involved with the Donald Trump administration. That's a bit different. That's a bit interesting. He's a billionaire based in the US, and so he's raised more flags in the eyes of the media. But in general, having exceptions to policy where you can make judgment calls to say, giving someone an exception would benefit New Zealand in the long run, that's not unusual, and it's not necessarily a bad thing either.
I mean, exceptions may not be unusual, but doesn't this particular exception, where it was sort of like 12 days versus 1,350, kind of perpetuate the idea that rules are a bit different for those who are wealthy?
Hold on, go back and ask yourself why everyone's interested in this. It's because he's involved with a controversial politician, and it's because he's a billionaire that invested in a very successful company, Facebook. That's the situation here. He's of interest because he's a bit different. Exceptions happen all the time, though. And if an exception can be made where they can benefit New Zealand, that's a positive thing. And so a judgment call was clearly made that having Peter Thiel as a New Zealand citizen would benefit New Zealand through the connections he can provide from New Zealand's technology sector to the United States technology sector and the further connections he has around the world. He's also invested in a very successful company in New Zealand as well, and we should be welcoming more investment in the country.
So
no, you don't have to be a citizen to invest, but if it can aid New Zealand and an argument can be made that it's positive for New Zealand, I think these exceptions should be considered.
So on what grounds would the same kind of exception be made for someone at a lower socioeconomic tier?
As an elected MP, I advocate on behalf of people that want exceptions to immigration policy because they've got good arguments to make that they should be allowed to be here just about every single week. It's not uncommon, and I don't care how much money they have in their back pocket. I care about whether it's going to be net positive for New Zealand. And that's why, as an elected MP, I make representations to the Minister of Immigration all the time. It's quite common, it's quite normal, and it's all about what's in the best interest of New Zealand. Sometimes the Immigration Minister agrees, sometimes he doesn't, but you put forward the best case on what you think is going to be good for New Zealand.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.